This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. You're listening to Live and Learn on the Bigger Picture with me, Dashran Yohan. 2 years ago, the idea of a youth-based party wasn't something that was at the back of people's mind, what more hotly discussed on social media, but a lot can happen in 2 years. And in the wake of Lanka Sheraton and growing political instability, YB Syed Saddiq, the former youth and sports minister, has decided to start exactly that. A youth-based political movement slash party, you know, centered around Malaysian youth, a party that hopes to disrupt the very fabric of Malaysian politics. So now many young people are thrilled by this notion, but realistically, can this party grow into an actual force to be reckoned with? So to help me answer this very question are two political commentators. First up is Dr. Bridget Welsh, an honorary research associate at the University of Nottingham Asia Research Institute, and James Chai, head of commercial and research at Invoke Solution, who is a youth himself. So welcome to the show, guys. Happy Merdeka. How are you guys doing?
I'm good, but I'm quite youthful, you know.
You are.
Young at heart.
You absolutely are. And that's why I wanted both of you on the show. So to start off, right, Syed Saddiq has said that he and his team has not decided if this yet-to-be-named collective, I'm just going to call it collective for now, currently Build Muda Malaysia, will be a political party or a movement. Now, can you break down the difference between the two and the possible implications of him taking either one of these parts? Bridget, let's start with you.
Well, I think when we talk about a movement, we talk about a group of people working together for common goals and ideas. So we can have an environmental movement, we can have a civil rights movement, we can have a nationalist movement. But we talk about a political party, they're clearly focused on winning political power and office. And I think there still is clearly a tension between these two, right? In the sense that I think Muda Malaysia has not clearly articulated if they're going to be running for office or whether or not they're just going to have a clear set of organized ideas. And in my view, what I see is neither a movement nor a party at this juncture. I see what I call a counter movement. That means that they are against something that is existing. They're against the way the political parties are working. They're against the type of politics that are operating. And within that, this concept of elitism, exclusion, racialized politics, moving away from the polarized politics and sort of moving towards something that is problem solving. But we don't yet know exactly what they are trying to articulate beyond that they're saying they're not what exists. They want to be something different.
Okay. In recent months, there have been plenty of talk on how the country is shackled by old men who play old politics. The political scene as a whole is becoming increasingly fractured. You know, and parties are starting to sprout like mushrooms. So amid all of this, is a youth-based party what Malaysia's political scene needs right now?
For me, I think when it comes to the recent sprouting of many political parties, I think it's very easy for us to assume that that is variety, more choices for people to select from. But I actually don't think so, because especially when you look at Mahathir's party, Perjuang, the recent new party was built from Bersatu. So the similarities are too vast. And Bersatu was built from UMNO. And there were also a few versions of UMNO. And all of these parties that has been offered so far has been a race-based, religion-centric. And the common narrative is that they are victims of circumstances because Malaysians just simply would not accept something that goes outside of this model. And therefore, there wasn't really true alternatives in the past that people could select from. And I think what a youth-based party does right now is that it at least offers something that is different, that hasn't been considered before. Either this is a youth-based movement. In essence, what that means is that a lot of the issues that they champion are revolving around youths, or it could be a youth-led movement, which is one that is just every issue under the sun, but it's taken up by young people, because the assumption is that young people may offer something more interesting. So I think when it comes to whether the political scene needs this right now, I think the answer is yes, because at least it offers variety that counts as variety. other than that, I think this is also potentially a good opportunity to cure any kind of disillusionment or apathy that young people have for politics. Now, a lot of the excitement that comes from social media, at least from the urban circles, is that they have looked at politics for at least this recent decade, and they found that even whatever hope that they had for Pakatan Harapan in 2018 was reversed, and then it goes back to this roulette of prime minister candidates about personalities, and therefore they really requires a different offering by any political party or politicians. So whatever this youth-based party can do is to have at least a cure for the apathy or disillusionment on the assumption that this youth-based party could carry the straight idealism that they potentially could carry. In other words, if a young person now can hear whatever they want in the form of idealism that is being said by a mainstream political party, they would suddenly start to care for politics, which they wouldn't have by any older politicians before. So it offers a cure for apathy and disillusionment, as well as it offers an alternative, a real alternative to the political scene right now.
And the thing about this youth party, what I think a lot of people are a little bit confused about is that even within established parties, we're talking our UMNOs, our DAPs, our PKRs, all of them have youth wings. So why the need for a youth-based party? What is going to be so different about what Syed Saddi is trying to do here versus, let's say, an UMNO youth wing or a PKR youth wing?
The assumption is that this party, we haven't had the full details as to how this party would be structured. But the idea is that these young leaders in this youth party would have mainstream voices inside the party. Now, established parties like UMNO, Bersatu, DP or PKR, when they have youth wings of their own, it is very, very ordinary for youth wings to be secondary. And it is only used as a stepping stone to go into the mainstream political wing of that party. And therefore, in the past, they have always been, the youth wings of these established parties have always been quite submissive and therefore also less idealistic of their own, because what they want to avoid was to step on the elderly's toes until they are up there. So that also means that in order to make their voices heard in that very, very secondary or subordinate level, they turn to more extreme ideas, and therefore a lot of the youth wings, like in UMNO or Bersatu, they are seen to be like the worst instincts of that political party as their way to stand out. And it also means, therefore, that a lot of the youth wings, because they struggle so much to gain limelight, they are more likely to be corrupt. And what we see from Bersatu's youth election, at least, a huge amount of at least deemed corruption, where they offered support letters, or people would write, one of the youth leaders wrote a letter to Kedah state government to have GLC positions. So very much like regressive things that we don't expect young people to do were acted out in the youth wings of these established parties, because a lot of the structures in established parties simply do not favor the youth wings. It is treated similarly as subordinated, like a woman's wing inside a party as well, where they are treated as second-class party members, and therefore a youth-based party on its own has a very clear differentiating factor when they don't divide the party membership or the leadership level into several classes. And I think that's the biggest differentiator.
I want to add another layer to that question. Syed Saddi became the Minister of Youth and Sports when he was under Bersatu, when he was part of the youth wing, and he became the Minister of Youth and Sports, and he managed to champion the many progressive ideas such as the Yellow Ribbon Project. So doesn't this show that you can be successful even in a youth wing?
I think let's go back to the first question, which has to do with the nature of political parties. I think we need to look at the subject more analytically. I think these parties are hierarchical institutions, leadership centered, across the political divide. So therefore, by inherent process, this hierarchical decision making makes it very difficult for youth to be included in the process. You also see that many young leaders, and some of these parties do have young leaders, PKR, UMNO, I would say DAP, among others. Huh? Many of the young leaders that exist are delegitimized as a result of having to follow that of the older leaders. Mm-hmm. So therefore, they lose their base in this. So we also see more fundamentally, as James was saying, is that these leaders are what I call compartmentalized. And this means that they're locked into their group and they have a role of being the attackers in the existing nature of polarized politics in Malaysia. So they become caught up in that process. You can see as the history, people like Hishamuddin Hussein lifting the Chris as the youth movement in 2015, I recall. So you see these processes that are there. Now, in terms of Said Saddiq's aspects of his performance, right? I think that, he did manage to get things done. And in part, it was because he was close to the prime minister at that time, John Mahathir. And I think also there's a recognition that he was also part of they're trying to build their political legitimation in that context. And I think the reality is that he knows that the vehicle of Bajwang and is going to be less viable politically. And so this is an alternative for him that is also a pragmatic choice, not only the idealism that it represents. I think that, these political parties, as they function, the system as it functions, with its polarization, with its hierarchical leadership, really can limit the ability for younger voices to actually make the changes that they would like for the young people. And young people are treated as things to win over, especially around election time, as opposed to having a specific sets of issues that need to be addressed in a more meaningful policy platform.
Okay, we do need to take a quick break right now, but when we come back, we will continue our discussion on Said Saddiq's youth-based party and whether it will be a force to be reckoned with. This is Live and Learn on the Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Live and Learn on the Bigger Picture. I'm Dashran Johan, and joining me on Zoom are Dr. Bridget Welsh, an honorary research associate at the University of Nottingham Asia Research Institute, and James Chai, head of commercial and research at Invoke Solutions. And we are talking about Said Saddiq's newly announced party movement. They're still not very clear on the exact machinations of their collective for now, but in an interview with Malaysia Kini, Said Saddiq said that it will have a lineup of leaders comprising of, and this is key, few politicians, but instead young professional activists, startup founders, religious preachers, academics. What is the significance of all this?
Well, I think that what we see is, we see an engagement with multiple talent across the political spectrum. People who are, in the sense that they are, they're not tainted by the political process. And keep in mind, one of the problems of the political process now has been that leaders have longstanding personal antagonism. And it's these antagonisms that have really, they constrained Pakatan Harapan. They even constrained parts of Bersatu and even Perikatan Nasional now. So I think that, this is a new opportunity to create new solidarity. At the same time, the diversity of it will create some challenges of having clear set of platform, a clear sense of leadership and direction. And I think there will be some finding one's ground because you're dealing with people from very different walks of life with very different perspectives. And I think it's going to take time to find that common ground. And that's where I think it is important to appreciate that Said Saddiq's leadership is still predominantly his political role in Pakatan Harapan and connection to Mahathir, to a certain degree, is a bit of baggage for the movement. It'll be important to see among those names who emerges as among the leaders in the movement as well.
I think the good thing is that this is trying to build something that is broad-based and a consensus-building movement, where they try to tap into as many different networks and pockets in society so that they can expand and scale up quite quickly. Especially for new political parties, I think Said Saddiq knows it enough that to build that level of support, you need at least a reach into different communities. And that's why they are quite different from one another as well. It's only a few politicians, startup founders, or like business owners, as well as civil society. So the idea is that these are not only are considered to be high performers who are from diverse backgrounds, as well as diverse in terms of the industries they're from. But also this, I think, represents the face of the Malaysian leadership that they want. So the significance is that there's a higher success of any movement or political party if you can reach every corner in society. Whether this is considered to be every corner or not, is definitely something to be seen. But at least this is the attempt of trying to do so. But I think it also symbolizes something that's quite interesting that is potentially disruptive, which is this idea that now you can finally choose both. In the past, if you are in politics, you cannot probably be in business or NGO. These spaces are considered to be quite unique from one another. But now I think the logic that is being introduced here is that nation building does not belong to just people in politics, right. But it also belongs to people from different facets in society, because whatever they're doing in that part of society also contributes ultimately to politics. And therefore, they're trying to at least throw a spanner into the works in trying to see whether we can rethink this whole idea of what nation building and politics is. Carrying on from what Dr. Bridget talked about, I think the risk in doing this is that now there could potentially be a co-option of people in these separate fields. So whatever we talked about as a benefit just now can also be a double-edged sword, in that last time we see a few NGO leaders, at least, they were being co-opted into politics and then become MPs or state assembly people, and they are tainted to a certain extent because of the political process. Either they say things they don't mean, they no longer can keep up, or they no longer voice out for things that matter because of their political interests. All of these things, the taint of politics may follow them, and if you know, they are from the NGO space, then it could also create a ripple effect that is negative towards people from the NGO movement. So that is one of the risks that I see could potentially materialize.
I think it's useful for us to look at the history also, right? Mm-hmm. So there are two things to talk about to build on what James was saying. Number one, we have this idea of an umbrella movement, right? Mm. In a sense, one of Pakatan Harapan's challenges was that it was an umbrella. It tried to bring in too much, bring in so many different perspectives, right? Mm-hmm. From the racialized politics of Mahathir of the past to the kind of multi-ethnic kind of Versailles, Maria Chin movement that came in, right? And as a result, it was not able to find clear goals and the polarization of the politics of Malaysia over race, over religion, over issues associated with, questions of reform, really help. We're underscoring some of the personality differences. And I think this movement will have to ultimately grapple, square on with these issues in ways that find kind of not necessarily take positions on these polls, but find ways to kind of have an alternative narrative that moves the discussion away from these polls. And this is a real big challenge. The second thing to keep in mind is to look at the social movements of the past. Bursa is a very interesting example, right? How it combined politics and it moved from and to try to build a middle ground to push for electoral reform. And in this context, this movement, really was quite successful. But also, as James quite rightly puts it, once you get in politics, you end up having to choose very difficult sides, especially in the polarized context of Malaysia. And the movement has lost a lot of traction compared to the past, especially among broad parts of society. We can see that the electoral reform discussion was effectively co-opted. And in fact, has not gained enough traction from the perspective of meaningful reforms, at least at this juncture. So I think the movement needs to look at these other experiences. When I said earlier about how Malaysia, it has to be Malaysianized, and for the Malaysian context, it needs to go back into Malaysian history and to learn the lessons from these movements mm-hmm. and these experiences to be able to kind of position. I think this is going to take some broader vision. And the fact of the matter is there will be competition between the elites that come into the process. This is inherently part of politics. And I think this will be something that has the potential to derail the movement, especially given that the, you know, the way that the movements are reported on is they'll pick one or two key things. The media likes to sensationalize things. And so, you know, it is under high scrutiny. So it's going to be, I think, a big challenge.
Let's talk about the electorate itself, the voters. Is there even a specific youth identity in Malaysia? What I mean by that is the electorate seems to be split based on race or economic background, but so far it doesn't seem to be split based on age. So how can Syed Saddiq's party maneuver this complex political landscape?
In the past, how we study polling results has always been like what you rightly said, which is based on race and maybe economic background. We haven't filtered through that much based on age, although that is perfectly possible because of the polling stations that they vote from. In other words, we haven't had a consistent frame of thinking, Dr. Bridget might may correct me, on how young people think of each generation. What I do know, at least, just based on the past analysis I've done on 2018's election, we started to see at least early signs about how maybe young people are more open to vote for candidates across racial lines. Because in the past, even the opinions of Malaysian voters on their favorite ministers have always been based on race. In other words, let's say an Indian voter would vote, would always say that their favorite ministers are, let's say, Mr. Gobind Singh, Mr. Xavier Jayakumar. So it's very much organized along those lines. Whereas young people, at least they are able to break out of that a little bit. I don't know whether this is consistent across the board, but there are early signs that young people think of it that way. But what I'm also thinking is that youth identity that YB Syed Saddiq is trying to appeal to refers to a way of thinking, particularly here. In other words, I don't know if, let's say, if things were okay, and he built a youth movement, whether it would garner as much traction or not. The reason why it is very compelling an idea now is because youth refers to a way of thinking of trying to discard the old way of doing politics. Sometimes I think that just by introducing, let's say, another compelling cause that is not youth-based, people will be equally as excited because of the presence of an alternative that seems to appeal to our higher idealism. And therefore, if he's able to therefore draw that line to say that youth identity really refers to a way of thinking, that a future that is not tied to the past as well as not tied to, let's say, the egos of certain personalities is possible, then that is a compelling case, not only to young people, let's say below 35, but also cutting across different age groups, even right up to people in their 50s or 60s, as seen through a lot of the social media comments. But once again, this is not necessarily the most representative sample as well.
Well, I've looked very extensively at survey data, and I have a new report coming out next month that looks at survey data over the last 15 years. And so one of the things we look at are generational differences. And there have been a number of other studies on youth that have been done over time. So the what studies show us that the youth have many identities, but there is a uniqueness about the cohort. And in political science, we talk about people who've been shaped by a period of time, all right? So the Reformasi cohort is a particular period of time in Malaysian history. The NEP and the racial violence of 1969 is another cohort, right? So this cohort of people after 2018 are very interesting. The younger people get their news differently. They think about nationhood differently. They grew up with time. They don't have quite the same hang-ups about race, although that is changing a bit about identity politics, but it's because they've grown up at a time, interestingly enough, of Malay dominance. So they don't necessarily have the same period. They have higher expectations and demands for the political process. They expect choices. There's a certain degree of impatience. So we can see that younger people are consistently voting for opposition in a much higher way in the past. They are ideologically more polarized. So what we have is that there's some who are they reflect the period of what we saw during Pakatan Harapan in particular. There are more liberals who are much more liberal, and then there's a large cohort that are much more conservative. Mm-hmm. And so there is this ideological polarization. As James was saying earlier, there's less engagement So what was very important to understand is that these voters from under 30 to 21 have really underregistered. Let me give you an example of this. 41% of the young population in Selangor between 21 and 30 have not registered. 41%.
Wow.
Okay. In Sabah, it's 22%. So what we're talking about is that, there will be this missing generation that auto registration will be for people who come in, right? It won't be for these other people who have, unless they register to vote. So in a sense, I think that, what the youth movement slash party, whatever, how it emerges is they have to find a way to carve out certain aspects of this. And this is where traditionally when people talk about jobs, young issues of economic participation, economic livelihoods, that's where the way the politicians do that. Now it's about changing and dealing with some of the fact of how the youth are a unique cohort, but at the same time, on most issues, they're just like older Malaysians. So, and this is where it is really difficult. And where what James was pointing to is something very important, is that the youth narrative will be one that will be created.
So to add another layer to this, to what we're talking about right now, is there are also some who say that Syed Saddiq's party will mostly only appeal to urbanites, right? Because that's where we are looking at this whole social media rage for his party, the support and the passion. First of all, what are your thoughts? And I ask this because if the party only appeals to urbanites, wouldn't he be sort of competing when it comes to parliamentary seats with Pakatan Harapan strongholds like Selangor, like Penang perhaps? How do you go about this?
For YB Syed Saddiq, to be honest, we don't have enough data as it is too early for us to know whether it is just a movement that is concentrated in the urban space. But I also think that they are interested to find out ultimately whether this is a movement that has a wider reach or not. It does depend as to whether the YB Syed Saddiq's youth party, if it is to become a party, gets to field candidate across the country so that they can actually test using real election results on the outcome. So whatever enthusiasm that we're receiving right now is very much concentrated in the space of the urban centers because we're receiving them through social media. But we don't know whether that is a conclusive truth as to say that the youth party only has traction around these areas. But I think regardless, eventually when it comes down to it, when push comes to shove and election is near, the constituencies that they would target would be primarily urban constituencies and maybe some mixed one as well. Because these are coincidentally places where voters at least have taken the plunge to vote for an alternative in the past, as well as these people are most likely to be that group to be frustrated with the status quo and want something new. Now, I think the biggest traction that this youth party has, apart from young people, is also on people who are frustrated with status quo. And that's why when they consider where they have a higher likelihood of success, they would take those things into account in deciding their strategies. So I don't know. I think there must be enough testing either through social media reach or at least through election results in order for us to know whether this is simply urban movement. But what Dr. Bridget has alluded to is that this could potentially be one that is veering on liberalism. Therefore, it may be quite close to many people who are ideologically different from this.
Just a couple quick points to add to that. 76% of Malaysia is urban. So I think that it is a very large number of opportunities. But I think one of the challenges is that Malaysia doesn't have local elections. And local elections provide alternatives, right, for them to gain experience, to also have different avenues. And I think this is where, you know, the movement has to be very strategic if it becomes a political party about where it wants to position itself and in what particular targeting. And if we look at movements more broadly that have been successful, is that they have a long-term view, not a short-term view, and that they position themselves within local governments, within state governments, as well as national governments, and they have clear targets to allow that. So they become, they look at different entry points. And I think this would mean also trying to get on other forms of decision-making bodies as well. And I think that this is going to be very interesting because this movement is concerned more about policy in terms of some of the individuals, more about kind of thinking about having different sets of inputs. And that's where they will have to think very calculatingly. Ironically, many of the youth seats that are over 50% of the vote, for example, are in places like Trigano, you know, as opposed to, and it is very difficult, even though I think James is right that they will contest urban areas, but it's very difficult to win urban seats because urban seats are so many voters and there it is a lot to win over. That's where you need a clear platform.
Now, going back to the feasibility of this party, Sai Sadi said that the movement was presently being funded by its own members and leaders and then will later prioritize online crowdfunding and impose caps on individual and corporate donors to ensure it, and I quote, never ever enslaves itself to private interests. Now, as a young idealistic person like myself, you know, this gets me excited. But will Sai Sadi's party realistically be able to sustain itself and compete with established giants with all their funding?
Well, I think that if we look at the way that funding has operated in the past, the nature of politics in Malaysia is changing. Money has become less important as a campaign, as issues have become more important. Right? So we have weak political parties, patronage networks are eroding. We see a situation where money is going down, but many people just keep it for themselves. But it's not actually reaching the voters. And we see issues have become very important. Traditionally in opposition politics, when many of the Pakatan Harapan parties were, they didn't use that much money. And they still don't use that much money in their way that they're campaigning. It's really, and those who use money have been really kind of in more rural, semi-rural seats in very large numbers. And the way money is being allocated is also very different than the past. We're moving towards professionalism as opposed to kind of down into the parties. So I think what this means is that the money has become more difficult as an issue and is transforming as the politics in Malaysia itself is changing. And in a sense, this movement /party, Muda Malaysia, is also part of that change. When I was looking at the original question that you supposed, I was thinking about how Obama changed the nature of fundraising in the United States the election, how he used it by more crowdfunding in individual areas. And some of that same practices have been adopted in Malaysia. And in some ways, this is also adopted in the context of the way that some of the parties are operating now. Huh? But in order for this to be sustainable, you have to have an issue-based politics that challenges the other issue-based politics. And the other issue-based politics in Malaysia are race and religion, the identity politics. So you need to find a way to be able to counter that narrative and at the same time to raise funds. And I think, and do so in a very transparent fashion. But the challenge, however, is to make sure that people who enter the politics do not become tainted by the nature of cronyism and corruption. And it is not just the politician, it is a systemic problem. Mm-hmm. And so that means that the fundraising processes for parties such as movements like Muda Malaysia also have to be conscious of how they're going to transform that up front. And this is not so easy because it's not just about private interest, because what's private and what's public in Malaysia is equals the same, all right? I mean, you know, as we can see. Right? So it there are real needs, reforms, and systemic changes in order to make those shifts. So it is very idealistic and it is very modest. And I think they won't need as much money as if they're issue-based in this process. And if they get into the patronage politics, they're inherently going to lose. But at the same time, they have to find the right balance of which that involves a recognition of using resources wisely.
James, Bridget brought up Obama as an example. I think AOC in America also has, you know, talked about how she prioritized crowdsourcing or crowdfunding. Do you think Sai Sadi will be able to do that in Malaysia? Will he be able to compete with the established giants?
I think it is very possible for you to crowdfund and to campaign well, simply because social media as well as any online technology would allow you to reach out at a very, very low cost. You can even measure which group is more effective, and you can only, you can specify very, very clearly which are the groups that you want, let's say, your campaign messages to reach to, and therefore you are able to really drive down the cost. So it's like what Dr. Bridger talked about, the cost and how we look at money in campaigns is very different these days. And therefore, whatever money that they are able to raise online, and I'm sure that young people or people who believe in a third force will be able to contribute to this movement. But what I'm having a slight dilemma on is whether they are able to compete against the money that is existing in larger political parties. Because a lot of political parties, even like the Future Forward Thailand movement, that is very youth-based, relied quite a lot on the connections as well as the money of its founder, which is who is a billionaire. And therefore, money in politics still matter to a certain extent to compete. And therefore, also on the arena about how established political parties have a better brand name. And this has to be looked at from the perspective about how when you need someone to vote for you on the ground level, you probably have to let them know about how your flag looks like. And then to recognize your face, that you visited them a couple of times before they actually entrust you with their votes. All these things not only take time, but they do need certain amount of resources so that you have enough of a few workers that helps you do all of that. And I think when it comes to many different constituencies in Malaysia, a lot of the voting is still quite localized. In other words, they depend on whether they see your face in their local constituency before they can consider voting for you. And it's not simply about appearing in the mainstream that changes a person's opinion on whether they would vote for you. And that's also why we see a lot of ministers, when they assume ministership, their support level in their particular constituency suffers because they don't appear in that area as much and more, and people start complaining about it. So at least from qualitative data, from what we're hearing on the ground, is that these things still matter. And therefore, you need a certain amount of resources to work the ground in order for a movement to not only be strong, but also to be sustainable in the long run.
So with that in mind, would this party be ready in the event of a snap elections, let's say end of the year or beginning of next year?
No.
Sorry. I know this may contradict a bit of what I've said earlier, but I think they would be ready in the sense that they are a third force. Now, the reasoning for this is that a third force doesn't require it to be too solid in terms of having too many volunteers, too many policy ideas, or even inspiring. They just have to be credible enough as a third force, with enough people moving it forward to be something that people consider voting for. But it wouldn't be ready to the extent to assume government or even to be the kingmaker in politics. I think that would be less likely, but they would be ready in the sense of being able to offer people an alternative or at least an option that maybe 20-30% of the people who are loyal supporters of certain established political parties would consider voting for. And maybe these are also centralized around some of the urban liberal constituencies.
I think that there, in this context, if a snap election was held October, November, which is one of the things on the cards, or next year, early next year, maybe March, I think that this party movement would have a real challenge. And I think it would have to, it's not just the challenge that, I think James may be right that they can try to gain support and work towards that. And I think that, but I think they have a real, the challenge is different. The challenge is that if they do go into the process, they will be taking away from traditional Pakatan Harapan opposition government people. And they will not necessarily be carving into the base for Mahathir National and Barisan National. And in a sense, moving in, it won't be necessarily a third force. It will be a replacement force, or at least try to be a challenging force for more reform-oriented parties. And I think this is a challenge that it will face, people make in terms of, they've made in terms of choosing independent candidates, and they will have to face in terms of facing this area. So for me, the question will become, how strategic this movement is in terms of cooperating with proceeds and trying to get itself positioning in this context, to have a voice at the table where they, in fact, if things become more competitive, which it may happen, right? What's happening in Flim is not necessarily what may happen 4 months from now or 2 months from now. All right. I think that then they can actually try to basically bridge into new supporters if they get access to certain sets of seats. That will mean some cooperation. And of course, dealing with the existing political system. I don't rule it out, but I think that it's a different tactic. If they head on against Pakatan Harapan and Barisan National PN parties, probably going to end up losing in the process and hurting different groups in the process, becoming more of a spoiler. If they're more strategic, then I think that they are more likely to get a seat.
Okay. Unfortunately, we are running a little short on time. So before I let you guys go, just some quick final thoughts from each of you. So looking into GE15, GE16, perhaps, will Syed Saddiq's party be a political force to be reckoned with?
For me, regardless of how they turn out in an election, I think simply by having a youth party could hopefully serve as a reminder of our idealism, which is typically lost quite quickly when a lot of politicians enter into the arena. So it is, regardless of how, you know, the percentage of seats that they're able to get in parliament or state assemblies, it is constantly, hopefully, it could serve as an accountability tool or a reminder of what is possible. Of course, assuming that they're able to maintain that idealism before getting into any kind of internal bickering, because there will be competition and people will have egos of their own. So before that part comes, hopefully, it serves as this hopeful future that points us to what is possible, whether or not they eventually win enough seats.
Bridget?
I think that there are three things that are important. One is platform. One is the personalities that come in, the leaders. It needs to expand. That's the second one. And the third is positioning. And these are the three things that I think are going to be very important as the movement evolves and the tactics that they choose.
All right. Bridget, James, thank you so much for joining me today.
Most welcome. Mm-hmm. Appreciate to be here.
Thanks so much.
That was Dr. Bridget Welch, an honorary research associate at the University of Nottingham Asia Research Institute, and James Chai, head of commercial and research at Invoke Solutions. And we were talking about Syed Saddiq's newly announced youth-based political party and exploring if it can realistically become a political force to be reckoned with. So if you missed any part of this conversation or any previous Live and Learn episodes, you can check out our podcast on the BFM app, bfm.my, or on Spotify. Once again, I'm Darshan Johan, and this has been Live and Learn on the Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.